Welcome to the Innovation in Financial Inclusion podcast. I'm Andrew Wallace.
And I'm Paul Vick. We're from Community Finance Solutions at the University of Salford. Community Finance Solutions is a research unit specializing in financial inclusion and affordable credit.
In this episode, we'll be talking about two types of no-interest loans linked to financial inclusion. The first being loans that are provided instead of or in addition to benefits, and the second is a no-interest loan pilot set up by Fair for All Finance for people who can't afford existing forms of credit.
To learn more about this, we have spoken with Professor Chris Grover and Sheena Murtagh. Chris is a professor in social policy at the University of Lancaster, and he has conducted research on the history of loans in UK welfare policy for many years. Sheena is the chief exec of South Manchester Credit Union, which has piloted a no-interest loan scheme for the Treasury and Fair for All Finance.
Chris, can you tell us a bit about the origins of no-interest loans in UK welfare policy?
Although it was kind of argued in the 1980s that loaning as part of social security policy was new, there has in fact been the ability for governments at different levels, from kind of central government down through local authorities and parishes, in fact, to loan on an interest-free basis to the poorest people since 1819. So actually, the as I say, the ability of kind of poor relief authorities, for example, however that is kind of described over time through poor relief, then through kind of the post-World War II welfare state, the ability to loan money to the poorest people has been around for about 200 years now, and it was originally put into legislation in an act in 1819, and I'll just read you the quote, and it enabled poor relief authorities to pay a loan to anyone who could have supported himself and his family, but for his extravagance, neglect, or willful misconduct, did not support their family. So the introduction of loans was very much linked to judgments about character, and really introduced as a means of managing or attempting to deter people from claiming a poor relief. Kind of the idea being that if people received a loan rather than a grant for their poor relief, that they would actually see that as being problematic and therefore wouldn't kind of claim or approach the poor law authorities in the first place. And in addition to that, it was also seen as being an educational kind of tool, that if that people really should support themselves and their families, and to do that, they should save for those times that they weren't able to work through either through unemployment or sickness, and if they didn't save in advance of their need, then the poor law authorities could loan them money, and therefore they would essentially have to support themselves after the fact by repaying that money to the to the poor law authorities. So essentially, it really was attempting to make people responsible for their own support. That's the whole idea, really, of loaning money through kind of various social welfare policies, that you make the individual responsible for supporting themselves. And we kind of see that in contemporary versions, both in kind of social security policy, but also more broadly in education, for example, higher education, loans for tuition fees. It makes the individual student responsible for the cost of their education. So actually a very long history in terms of poor relief So coming forward from there into the post World War II welfare state, the loaning of social assistance as the replacement for poor relief became was only really reserved in a very specific circumstance of if a person was destitute but they didn't have an entitlement to social assistance, then they could be loaned some money through the social assistance scheme. And essentially that the people that were being thought of there were those people who were not entitled to social assistance, because essentially they were in full-time work. But there was a recognition that somebody in full-time work, they might go through some kind of crisis or an emergency, they might be destitute. They wouldn't have an entitlement to social assistance because they're in full-time work, but they might still have kind of needs as a consequence of destitution, and they could receive some relief. But that kind of that there was obviously a massive shift there from the kind of poor law position of all relief that was offered could be offered as a loan, to a position where in 1948 there was only that kind of very specific set of circumstances for a minority of people. There aren't really the figures around to kind of indicate how many people received that kind of support. The next big change was 1986, when the loaning of social assistance once again became central to the social security system. It was the 1986 Social Security Act. It was 1988 when that actually came into force. And in this instance, it was what became loanable rather than kind of paid as a grant was not the everyday kind of social assistance that was paid to individuals and families, but what was then called kind of single payments. So this was additional payments on top of what was described as normal requirements in technical terms. So this was kind of additional support that might be for people in an emergency or crisis. If, for example, they'd lost their money or lost their benefit money, or their personal wallet stolen, that those kinds of circumstances, so kind of crisis emergency type circumstances, and then a payment for those things that it was recognized as being very difficult to budget for out of essentially low benefit income. So things like household goods, so cookers, fridges, bedding, floor coverings, and those kinds of things. Before 1988, there was a system of grants for that. From 1988, the majority of those payments became loans within the social security system. And once again, there was kind of the issues there were linked to notions of individual responsibility. And in particular wanting to incentivize people into paid work, the arguments there being that people who were essentially in low waged work didn't have access to those additional payments, so those people on benefits who did have access to those additional payments were kind of, the argument was, were disincentivized from returning to work because they had access to those additional payments as grants. Turning them into a loan would reduce that kind of incentive to remain on benefits and get access to those grants, because they become a loan, they have to be repaid out of benefit income, and also the repayment out of benefit income would actually lower the weekly amount of benefit income, thereby making low waged work allegedly kind of more attractive for people that were receiving benefits. So it was kind of explained almost like the equivalent of a kind of a high street bank So it was kind of like the creation of a credit facility for people on benefits. That was certainly how it was described by kind of civil servants working on it. But the kind of the ideas behind it were actually kind of more fundamentally related to the principles of social security, which are essentially people should not be disincentivized from taking paid work. And just to bring it right up to date, essentially those kinds of loans now exist in the current universal credit system in the guise of advances. So they're not called loans anymore. They're kind of called advance payments or budgeting advances. So a very brief kind of outline of 200 years of loaning poor relief and social security.
And then in terms of the social fund loans since 1988, what has been the scale of these loans?
Yeah, okay. They were at large scale, I think it's fair to say. If we take a 21 year period, so 1988-89 to 2008-09, budgeting loans. These were loans for those difficult to budget for items, such as cookers, fridges, beds, bedding, floor coverings. There were about 1 million of those loans per annum that were granted. So over that 21 year period, 20.5 million awards. But only two-thirds of applications for budgeting loans are actually granted. The Social Security authorities made over 31 million decisions about budgeting loans. As I say, 20.5 million of those ended up as actually receiving some award, not necessarily the full amount requested, but received some kind of loan. And over that period, that 21 period, about £7 billion was loaned, and 87% of that was recovered by the government. And that's really important, because another kind of part of this, of course, was for the government to attempt to save money. And essentially what loans in social security and poor relief do is recycle a pot of money from one set of claimants to another set of claimants to another set of claimants as the money is repaid. So that was budgeting loans. Crisis loans, again, over that 21-year period, 88-89 to 2008-09, there were about 900,000 awards per annum. There were 25 million decisions made over that 21 period, and just under 19 million awards made during that period. And that was an additional kind of around 1.4 billion loaned in crisis loans. 74%, so about two-thirds of, sorry, three-quarters of that was actually recovered. That isn't to say that was what was awarded. The budgets were limited, and there is evidence that some people were turned away without even kind of making a claim. So they've just said, look, you've got no chance of getting a loan, so don't bother claiming. So we don't actually know what the overall demand was. We just know kind of the decisions that were made, and then from that the loans that came. So kind of large scale in many ways, and that really continues into kind of the current universal credit system. The kind of the The advance payment, for example, is particularly used because at the beginning of a universal credit claim, there's a 5-week wait built into the system, and people are often coming from insecure kind of work, low paid work, don't have money to see them over, so they receive an advance of their payment. And the figures there suggest that of the this was last year, 4.7 million universal credit claims, 45% of those had some kind of deduction from their benefit income. That isn't all going to be loans, because there are other things that can be deducted from benefits. But it kind of gives an indication of the scale of deductions that there are from benefits that includes kind of repayment of those benefit advances.
Of the applicants that have access to these loans, what has been the experience of these loans and the impact of these loans on them?
Okay, kind of talking about that the kind of social fund that existed from 88 in the period before universal credit. I guess if you wanted to point to the advantages of loans, because grants had gone, the only option was a loan. So if people were in some kind of need, you know, if people needed a fridge or a cooker, then really the only way that they would be able to access that, unless that, you know, kind of where they live, there was some kind of charitable organisation that kind of was recycling furniture, that kind of thing, and making it available, then the only recourse they could have through social security provision was a loan. So in that sense, loaning is always second best to receiving a grant that you don't have to repay. But if there aren't grants available, then people, if you like, benefited because they were able to relieve their needs through the loan system. Although, as I say, the overall budget was limited for loans, so people didn't always get the maximum the amount that they asked for, which meant that sometimes they'd have to kind of buy second-hand goods, which kind of come with problems of breaking down and so on and so forth. So often the way that the loans were kind of decided upon, the value kind of created difficulties for people. The other possible advantage is of course the loans from the social security system sort of through the 90s and into the new millennium were interest free. So that means there was no additional costs that you would have seen, for example, if people had bought via a catalogue or some kind of rental type scheme or doorstep or doorstep lender, where of course the interest rates can compared to the high street banks, for example, be very very high. So there was a potential kind of economic benefit, I suppose, there. It's kind of interesting because some of the evidence suggests that some people preferred such things as catalogue buying because the repayment periods were longer. Although they recognised that they were having to pay interest, the repayment periods were longer, and actually the repayments, because of that, the repayments were lower than those in the social security system. The difficulties kind of relate to really in kind of indebting to the state the poorest people. It kind of commonsensically it kind of seems a bit perverse. To be honest, that you've got those people who are recognised as being on the lowest incomes because they are claiming social assistance are then being loaned money that is deducted from their benefits that drives them to an income below their social assistance rate. And of course, social assistance is kind of a kind of de facto kind of poverty line, so kind of driving people below that. And there's lots of evidence to suggest that created hardship for people being unable to pay their bills, or to if they were to pay their kind of utility bills, they'd have less to eat. Very similar to those kind of heat or eat kind of arguments that we hear now. So essentially, a lower income for people already on a low income over a fairly long period of time, and that just exacerbated the financial hardships that people were facing.
So recently, the government has launched a new no-interest loan scheme to be delivered through credit unions such as South Manchester Credit Union. But what are the key lessons to be learnt from the delivery of interest-free loans within the welfare state?
Yeah, I think the kind of the issues there are, for me, I'm not kind of so much practical, but they're kind of more a bit more abstract, and kind of thinking about. What is the nature of a loan? That, you know, this is in a sense not additional money for people. It is a payment at a particular moment to address a particular set of needs that somebody has at a particular moment. But in the longer term, because it has to be repaid, it's not additional money for people. And I think kind of the underpinning problem with loaning the poorest people money is actually they don't have enough money in the first place. So the issue, whether or not it's the state loaning the poorest people money, or indeed the state doing it via credit unions, is that the real fundamental issue is that it's the level of income that for example, benefits pay or low wages pay. The problem is with loaning people money is it just reduces in the as I say, in the kind of longer term, medium term, their incomes even further because they have to repay that money. So that's one point. And I think that the other a second point linked to that is that in many senses the danger is it's going to worsen people's financial situations rather than bettering those situations, particularly if those loans are being used for kind of day-to-day living expenses. I don't think, for example, there would be many debt advisors who would recommend people taking out a loan, for example, to pay their food bills, or to pay their kind of utility bills. And then the third issue, I think, is that it's kind of bearing in mind, and this is a broader kind of issue, it's bearing in mind where we can expect the responsibility to lie for supporting the income poorest people. Loans, whether or not it's in kind of social security or from the government via credit unions, are essentially putting the responsibility for supporting people onto the individual, and that links to that point about the income of those people being inadequate, because in many ways that then it shifts the responsibility onto the poorest people because they have to repay the loan, but the government could say, well, we're helping people with loans, and they don't have to look at those more fundamental questions, which are around, are the levels of benefit high enough in this country, and what income can people expect to see from earnings when they are at kind of entry level work.
Thank you, Chris. Now moving on to Sheena at South Manchester Credit Union. Sheena, could you start by explaining how the no interest loan scheme works?
Yes, okay. So the no interest loan scheme, the way it works is funded by HM Treasury and has been operated by Fair for All Finance. And that came out of quite a lot of research, actually went into academic research. The way it works is that community lenders like ourselves receive funding in order to issue loans with no interest. Usually we won't be charging interest. As a credit union, we don't charge a lot of interest, and we try to keep it as affordable as we can. But sometimes that interest element does make a big difference to people. It makes it that they can't afford it. So one of the criteria is that they couldn't afford just that extra slice of interest. Or one of the other ones would be that perhaps they have a problem with their credit profile and they're trying to recover. And this would be a way to help them recover. So we are it enables us to issue loans at no interest. So we receive funding to do that. So that's the funding amount per loan. We can actually also receive capital, but we don't need that as credit unions. But I think perhaps the CDFIs involved might need that part of it as well.
You stated that the loan is for those who can't afford an interest-bearing loan, but who else is eligible for this loan?
Yes, so the way it works is we don't advertise it separately.
Mm-hmm.
So people will apply for loans with us in the ordinary way, and we'll assess them as usual. And when they've been declined for an interest-bearing loan, an ordinary product, then we will then assess whether they might be eligible for a no-interest loan. And the idea is that the marginal declines, so what we found is the next third of our declines, if you like, the ones who are most marginal, this product seems to work very well for them because we're then able to offer them a product which helps them to improve their credit score, helps them to build their savings, helps them to get going with us.
And within your credit union, could you explain the scale of the scheme?
Yeah. So we at South Manchester Credit Union, we did the proof of concept for the scheme. So we were the first organisation in the UK to do it. And I decided to put us forward for that because we're a very small team. We're a medium-sized city-based credit union. So I'd say the data set is still quite small. It's less than 100 loans that we've done since we started, which is about a year ago. But I think the main impact has been in the individual effect for each person, the data that we've got from it. But it is so far quite a small data set.
Are there any specific demographic or attitudinal characteristics of individuals who take out these loans?
Yes. Okay. So thinking of the individuals involved, it's quite a wide range. As a credit union, we are here for everybody. So I'd say I can think of people particularly who are older people over the age of 70 for whom it's particularly hard to get credit at all because of their level of income and their future income. There is predominantly women, which is true of credit union lending, but not exclusively. It's quite a high number of people have a disability of some kind and or are single parents. Probably represents most age ranges one way or another. But yeah, it's particularly noticeable about older people because it is harder for them to get credit, whereas other people might be able to access it.
Okay, so it was meant, you'd say that compared to your other customers, that the people who take out the no interest loan or part of the no interest loan scheme are generally of the older demographic then? Is that the sort of main?
I'm perhaps not being clear. I think what I mean is it's harder for them to access another loan any other way. So it's particularly noticeable that they're in there. But it covers people, probably the youngest one is about age 20, so it's people from any age.
I know you only have a small data set, but could you explain what the impact of the scheme has been so far?
Yes, so it's designed to help people cover a one-off financial hurdle. That's the other part of the eligibility. That can be for a range of things. So the very first one we did was actually for funeral costs. So there's a one-off cost, which is very hard for people to cover, particularly when they're on benefits or a low income. So it would be things like that. We've also had people who have had perhaps a relationship breakdown and needed to restart somewhere else, recovering from domestic violence or from addiction. The idea is that they have a one-off thing that they really, cost that they can't meet any other way. So we found that the fact that we can come alongside and we are able to offer a loan and start a relationship with them, which then also includes saving, because that's the way it works in credit union world, that has a big impact in the long run for them. But there is always, for each one of them, I'd say there's a short-term positive impact and the fact that you're able to help them get past this hurdle, whatever it is.
Yeah, no. Sounds good. So it's more like sort of a big sort of lifestyle changes, it sounds like, or big events that have happened.
Yeah, another one that's been quite significant actually is people needing nursery fees up front in order to get back into work. One of the applicants was a single mother with four children who wanted to get back to work, and she needed to pay nearly £1,000 in advance in nursery fees, which is almost impossible if you're on universal credit. So that enabled her to actually begin start work and increase her income. So it's that those kind of tools for people which can make a big difference to all of their life.
You spoke earlier about the fact that a lot of people can't afford interest-bearing loans, but has this scheme enabled you to do anything else that you wouldn't be able to achieve with your regular interest-bearing lending?
I think it's made a difference to us as a team as well, staff team, because by the time we've reached the point where it's going to be a decline, we just, as a responsible lender, we're not able to lend at that point. We've already become, we've got to know the person a bit and heard their story. We've looked into their finances. So I think for the staff team, it's good to have somewhere that we can go with people and somewhere that we can keep working with them. I think that makes a difference. As I said before, it's giving people the opportunity to have credit union membership and to be included in that and to actually start moving on their finances in a positive way. Yeah.
From implementing the scheme, what are the key lessons that you've learnt?
I'd say that it's good to have the stimulus of innovation, doing something different. It's a slightly provocative product in that it challenges the whole premise of earning interest, which for community money lenders like us, that is quite challenging for us to think about that, because we need to earn the interest in order to run our social enterprise. That's how it works. So how do we justify not charging interest, and how is that going to be funded? I think I've also learned that it's important to work together with other stakeholders. We've engaged with our local housing provider, and we try to work with other people so that they can refer to us, and they get the chance to be involved in it as well. And I think long term, that's going to make a big difference to the scheme. And then the other thing is that I'm actually chair at the moment of the Consortium of Credit Unions for Greater Manchester. So we're also collaborating around this product to cover whole of Greater Manchester. So I've learned that it can be something which we can come together on and actually expand.
So you're actually looking to scale it up then, right? Okay, okay. So what advice would you give to any other sort of organisation if they were looking to implement a similar scheme? I know you've said you're bringing it to other areas of Greater Manchester, but I don't know, sort of elsewhere as well. You know, what advice would you give to another organisation?
Well, currently this is a pilot. So we did the proof of concept, and now we're following with a pilot. The pilot's organised through Fair for All Finance. So it would be about contacting them about that to find out more about the way that they're running it. I mean, I think there are other schemes along similar lines. I know there are in other countries. And I think that the hope is, in the long run, it will be something which local stakeholders will be willing to invest in and perhaps develop, you know, for their own needs locally.
What did you take away from these interviews, Paul?
Well, the first thing I took away is that providing interest-free loans to the poor has a very long history in Britain, starting in the early 19th century. So there must be things we can learn from that experience. And throughout, government have used interest-free loans to save money because it discourages people from using it. But also people have to repay it, so you get the capital back. And there's also an educational component about teaching people that they need to be supporting themselves and incentivizing them to work.
Yeah, what you've said there about that, there's a long history. But throughout that long history, in terms of a welfare policy perspective, it's also these loans have been provided on a large scale. You know, you listen to what Chris was saying about social funds between 1988 and 2009. They provided nearly 2 million loans with a value of around 400 million annually, which is a significant amount of money. And, you know, it shows that there was clear demand back then. But since then, it looks like demand has increased. You know, in the second half of 2020, nearly 1.4 million advanced payments were made under Universal Credit. So it shows that demand for no interest loans is actually growing.
But ultimately, even though it's provided at such scale, no interest loans provided by the welfare state don't necessarily address the underlying problem for that household, which is that they don't have enough income because benefits are not high enough. And in some cases, it may even worsen their problems because people will have to make repayments and those repayments are deducted from the benefits, so essentially reducing their income. And we know that around about 45% of universal credit payments have deductions attached to them.
And I understand that, but you know, it shows that there's lessons to be learned from that no interest loan scheme from a welfare context. But you know, looking at Sheena and her colleagues piloting the scheme at South Manchester Credit Union, it's from a different perspective, because welfare loans were about preventing destitution for people not eligible for other support, whereas the no interest loan scheme, you know, piloted by South Manchester, is about offering people, you know, a pathway to improve finance and access to services. It's aimed at people who are, you know, who are what we call marginal declines. They're not destitute. You know, these people have a realistic prospect of, you know, repairing their finances and ultimately becoming regular credit union customers. So I think to summarize the two interviews, I'd say firstly that no interest loans have been, you know, provided for a long time and at a large scale from a welfare state perspective. But secondly, that there are lessons to be learned there, and no interest loans are different because they're aimed at those who are marginally excluded, but with and that therefore they're likely to have a prospect to improve their finances.